supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. The Eagles and Redskins Monday night football game is set for 8:30 this evening, but related action is well underway at this hour around Lincoln Financial Field. A rally entitled, "We Are a People, Not Your Mascot," followed by a march, began at 4:30, and earlier this afternoon, I spoke with the protest's organizer, Donna Fan Boyle. I first asked her about her involvement in the controversy around the use of the Redskins name at Neshaminy High School, where her son was a student.
When I went to back to school night for my younger son, when he was a freshman, I walked into back to school night and I saw the, you know, that it was still the Redskin mascot and the word all over the place and the images all over the place. And I addressed it that night and just moved forward with it from then on. And I've spoken to the school board 14 times publicly, and of course ended up filing a complaint with the Human Relations Commission of Pennsylvania.
Now, as we move on to the NFL, let's note that a public school is paid for with tax dollars and government funding. NFL teams are paid for largely through ticket sales.
Right, and that's the difference. NFL teams or the privately owned teams are just that. They're privately owned, and it's hard to force somebody legally to change it because, you know, they're not being funded by the government. And, you know, we do hear with the schools, you know, when people are trying to get their school to change, we do hear a lot of these schools saying, well, when the, you know, Washington team changes, then we'll talk about it because, you know, they represent our country. Well, there's a difference. Like you said, they're funded by tax dollars, and those tax dollars are there to work for everybody, every minority, and no minority should feel that they're unwelcome in the school, or that they're going to be hurt by something in that school. So yeah, there is a big difference.
Is it then primarily through the court of public appeal that you hope to make a difference?
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing that we have. The other thing is too, with the way the atmosphere is these days in the United States, and with players of color taking a knee, you know, we were hoping, or we still hope, that those players that of color that play for the Washington team and all these teams that use native mascotry will see that, hey, you know, we're taking a knee for ourselves, but yet we're promoting racism against another minority.
Donna, I am remiss in not asking you earlier to describe your heritage and how that has perhaps informed your opinions on this.
Well, my dad was from Oklahoma, Choctaw Cherokee. I mean, we would go back to Oklahoma every year to see my great-grandmother. We would go to powwows and dance. And he just, you know, taught us to be proud of what we were or what we are. And he was always kind to everybody. You know, my dad worked as a manager in different companies, and he had a lot of Hispanic, people working for him. And he learned to speak Spanish so that he could communicate with these people, because he wanted them to feel comfortable and at ease with somebody that could understand them. So that's always been, you know, that's always been the way I was raised, that you make people comfortable and you honor them and you respect them and treat them with dignity.
Even well-intended rallies, marches and protests are not often places where kindness is evidenced in abundance. And to what extent at these types of rallies do you hear from naysayers?
Oh, gosh. When we were in Washington, D.C. a few years back on the Washington team's home turf, the things that we faced were horrible. I mean, we have pictures of an older gentleman. Now, we had children walking with us, Native children off the reservation walking with us, and this one man came out and cursed at us and gave us the finger, and right in front of these children, and telling us to go back to the reservation. There was a young girl that did the same thing. You know, it's just horrible the way these people think that since we don't accept their honor, that you know, they have the right to treat us in a, you know, a negative way. And that's the problem, is that when these people use these mascots, they own that mascot. They own the people that it pertains to. And so when you try to voice, you know, your opinion and say, look, we don't want that. This is not honor. We don't like this. It feels horrible. Then basically they tell you, well, we're telling you it's honor. And if you don't like it, then you can leave or you need to shut up. I mean, I've had people tell me if I don't like it here in this community, that I should just move to a reservation. I've had people call me a lot of names. One person called me a half-breed wagon burner. So there's your honor. You know, when they talk about honor and then they reduce themselves to talking to you like that and treating you like that, there's nothing about honor with these mascots. And it's none of it has to do with honor.
Donna, thanks so much for joining us on Newsworks Tonight.
Okay, thank you.
Speaking with We Are a People, Not Your Mascot march, rally, and protest organizer, Donna Fanboyle. As part of the Keystone Crossroads occasional series entitled I Voted Trump, WHYY's Annette John Hall checked in with Trump supporters across Pennsylvania, now 10 months after the president took office.
For Seth Coffer, a doctor and former Republican ward leader in South Philadelphia, Obamacare repeal was the top priority. He's frustrated that Republicans, with majorities in both houses of Congress, couldn't deliver on their promise to kill the health care law. He blames Democrats, too, but not Trump.
Why can't the people we elect put on some big boy pants and do their job? Otherwise, you know, they need to lose their jobs. That's all about draining the swamp.
The number one issue for Pastor Jim Bowers is job creation. Bowers runs a mobile soup kitchen that brings hot meals to 11 towns in northeastern Pennsylvania's coal region. He's disappointed that Trump hasn't had a more immediate positive impact on his community.
In Northumberland County right now, 30 to 50% of the people live on or below the poverty level. A lot of it's due to drugs, but a lot of that drug is because the people have lost faith in what they can do.
A robust economy also matters to Ben Hornberger. He's 23 and works at an Amazon warehouse in Cumberland County. Hornberger is hopeful, specifically, that Trump's push to reform the tax code will help his bottom line.
Under this framework, the first $12,000 of income earned by a single individual will be tax-free.
All that money I would get back, every check, which would help me pay my bills, my truck payment, buy food and stuff, take care of my dog, my girlfriend, my apartment, everything. So it's a big deal. I hope they get it done.
Phil and Marion Spotts live in Waterford near Erie. He's a retired insurance executive. She's a retired nurse. Phil says Trump gets involved in fights he should ignore and then says things that probably undercut his policy priorities.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now, out, he's fired.
Well, people, if they don't have a good enough vocabulary that can express themselves in normal English words, you don't have to use the vulgar language. And that disappoints me.
His wife, Marion, chimes in on the extension.
There's something about him that he just can't let that kind of thing go. His ego or something. He just can't seem to ignore it. He has to be in it.
Still, Marion says she likes that Trump acts like the commander-in-chief on foreign policy, especially when it comes to dealing with dictators like Kim Jong-un.
We are totally prepared for the second option. If we take that option, it will be devastating. I can tell you that. Devastating.
I think he's handling North Korea well. I think that we needed to get him stopped somehow. And how they're going to get him stopped, but I think that he's got him maybe realizing that we aren't messing around, we aren't kidding.
Daphne Goggins is a Republican ward leader in North Philadelphia. She bristles at media accounts that President Trump has failed as consoler-in-chief in the aftermath of recent tragedies and natural disasters.
He's been very consoling. He shows up. How about that? And I think that makes up for any whatever lack of compassion they're talking about, because people don't really, even though compassion is good, people need resources.
Schuylkill County's Jessica Turpak voted for Barack Obama in 2008, but later became disillusioned with his policies.
I really couldn't pinpoint it, you know. I think I just educated myself more.
She voted for Donald Trump in 2016 and gained national attention when she dressed her two-year-old son up as Baby Trump at a rally outside of Wilkes-Barre.
Do you want to go back to them or do you want to stay with Donald Trump?
Trump.
She got messages saying Trump's interaction with her son humanized Trump, but she's also felt a lot of pushback.
Somebody had called me the one day and said, oh my God, you've got to see these comments online. And you know what? For a brief second, I looked at them, and they were the most ridiculous, uneducated, and I never looked again.
In the meantime, she's pining for the chance to have the president meet again with her son.
I would love for him to see Baby Trump. He got a little bit of a haircut. He's going to preschool.
Annette John Hall, Keystone Crossroads.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. There's a Philadelphia connection to Pennsylvania's status as number one state for schools with planetariums. Joining me with a look back and then ahead is Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, yet another point of pride for Philadelphia and science.
We mentioned last week that the Fells Planetarium is the second oldest planetarium in the country, preceded only by Adler in Chicago. But the real interesting aspect of this is the development of the school planetarium that came along in the 1960s in response to the beginning of the space race between the Soviet Union and the United States, to follow on the heels of the Soviet Union's launch of Sputnik in 1957. In 1958, the National Defense Education Act provided funds for schools to purchase equipment to help advance education in response to that threat. Schools interpreted that as an opportunity to install planetariums in their schools across the country.
It's amazing to consider, given the current budgetary concerns, that there was once ample money for schools to build planetariums.
Well, the consideration was that it was really important for us to get our scientific and technical chops up to speed, and that we needed to educate students in the field of STEM, if you will, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And it was thought that planetariums might be a great way to focus that attention in an effort to better combat the Soviet threat. In fact, Pennsylvania had more school planetariums than both New York State and California combined. But this was the result of a very local connection with a gentleman by the name of Armand Spitz. Armand Spitz actually began his history here in this region, in the Philadelphia area, as a student at University of Pennsylvania and also later as a student at the University of Cincinnati. He left both schools without a degree, but actually after University of Cincinnati, came back to the Philadelphia area where he was born, and he joined the staff of a newspaper out in Haverford, Pennsylvania, as a reporter. His actual idea was to become a foreign correspondent. So what he did was he got himself on board a ship, headed over to Europe, where he thought he might have a chance in the late 1920s of becoming this great foreign correspondent. Along the way, though, he became very much interested in astronomy. He returned from his exploits and instead came to the Franklin Institute looking for an opportunity where he could become involved in astronomy. He was hired on as a lecturer. But then he wanted to build his own planetarium projector for his daughter, who wanted to have stars to project on her ceiling at home. Well, the short of the story is, his little device became really quite well known because it was compact, it was quite accurate, and the price was very, very, very low. It was affordable by schools all across the United States. With a partner, he formed a company. They began to build these planetarium projectors. And because of the National Defense Education Act, there was then funding available for these projectors to be purchased and installed all across the United States.
What remains now?
There are still school planetariums around the country that use Spitz projectors. Although Spitz died in 1971, the company has gone on to become a major producer of planetarium domes, state-of-the-art projection systems, and highly sophisticated and educational programs. The company is now known as Spitz Incorporated and is located in Chads Ford. They are one of the world leaders in the planetarium industry.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at whyy.org/news. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Heller, NewsWorks Tonight.